This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with political consultant Roy Fletcher. He has some ideas to share about what's transpiring from Baton Rouge to the Beltway. The legislative session is in full bloom with 23 days to go in the regular session of 2013. What's happening at the Capitol, and what is the fate of Governor Jindal? How much influence is Grover Norquist having on the government in Baton Rouge and beyond? We'll talk about this and more, including the revelations regarding the IRS and the Associated Press with Roy Fletcher. Also on the show is Fairleigh Cook Jackson from the LSU Museum of Art, a major exhibit about to open, and we'll talk with Fairleigh Cook Jackson about what's going on at the museum. All this, now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633 or 877-217-5757. You may reach us at inkstershow@wrkf.org online. We have Roy Fletcher, the distinguished political consultant, in studio with us, a man who's been around for a while. 30 years ago, he was out there backing David Connor Treen on the campaign trail. He's worked for a few governors and got Mike Foster elected in 1995 and in 1999 as his political consultant. And are you still working for the governor? Governor?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah?
But, you know, try to drain a little money out of that.
How's that going?
Well, I think that's pretty obvious right now. It's had his problems lately. I think that the culmination of things. I just had breakfast with Buddy Roman, and we were talking about second terms for governors, and it's been my sense, my observation since 1967, that second terms just so difficult because people just run out of energy and run out of ideas and run out of, you know, idealism and everything else. And Buddy concurred. We got to talking about 6-year terms, and we recognize that that has its own problems too. But it's interesting that that it's tough in the second term.
Man, it's tough. But in Governor Jindal's second term, he has embarked on a very ambitious agenda, more ambitious than that in his first term. He's not acting like he's a lame duck.
He's not acting like he's a lame duck. He has embarked on because this is his first session, I believe, in his second. A second term, is it not?
No, it's second one.
Second? Okay. Yeah, that's correct. I'm sorry, Jim. And the first one was successful, I thought. And now he's getting court reaction to it, and it's not being so successful. But on the other hand, you know, you do what you can do. But, yeah, he has embarked on a pretty ambitious agenda, and it seems like, mm-hmm. you know, he's running into a wall right now. And we'll see what happens. I mean, you never know with this thing.
Well, you're a lawyer. Should he have anticipated the court situation?
Yes, I think so. I think that with respect to the MFP, yes. And I know there were plenty of lawyers on the floor of that legislature, particularly in the Senate, that explained to the administration that they were going to have problems with that, and they're going to have problems with the bill that has. I think on retirement reform and that kind of stuff, it has a lot of objects. I think they've already had problems here in the 19th JDC. They'll have problems at the Supreme Court on that.
297-5633 is your number. Now, the governor is a disciple of sorts of Grover Norquist, the Republican, conservative, libertarian, whatever you want to call him.
He's founder. Yeah, Americans for Tax Reform or whatever
he's
called.
Founder and president of that, and he's known for this taxpayer pledge in which 95% of all Republican members of Congress signed it in 2012, including every member of our delegation who's a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Is this good for the country?
Well, you know, I've run into a fight with Mr. Norquist with John McCain in 2000. I think McCain would not sign any pledge and got up in Grover's business pretty hard and busted him up pretty good. Both of them survived. Went on, did whatever they had to do. The question is that good for the country? I don't think so, but that's just my opinion. I don't think signing anything like that's good for anybody. But on the other hand, I don't know how much influence Norquist has in the United States. I don't know how much he has in Louisiana. I could get involved with his, you know, being married to a Muslim and all of that kind of stuff, which he is. But that's not a big issue, I guess.
Well, there's some Republicans now who seem to think it is a big issue.
Yeah, Michelle Malkin, the rather enthusiastic, I believe she wrote a book on the Obama administration about corruption, and apparently she's gotten up in his Norquist's business about his wife's relationship with the imam of the mosque in Boston, and where these nuts came from that blew up the parade up there, the marathon. Yeah, I mean, I don't know quite all the details, and I don't know if Michelle Malkin has her details right, but she's usually pretty honed down on it. And her point was is that if this had been a liberal, everybody'd be screaming in the country. Every conservative in the country would be screaming right now. I mean, she makes a point.
Well, maybe some liberals should come to the defense of Mr. Norquist.
Seems to me they should stand right up and with the Red Star flag and get on with the program.
Well, I don't know about that. But what's wrong with being married to a Muslim?
Huh?
What's wrong with being married to a Muslim?
There's nothing wrong with being married to a Muslim. But the point, that's what I said. There's nothing wrong with being married to a Muslim. But the point of it is that this I don't know exactly the details that this relationship of this imam that this Boston mosque and so on and so mm-hmm. forth. But anyway,
Grover Glenn Norquist, who's a twice graduate of Harvard, like Buddy Romer, and is a board member for the National Rifle Association. You would think he might be an evangelical Christian, and maybe he is, but he's married to a Muslim, and that's something that most of us find good about our country, that we can reach out to people who are different than
Absolutely. I mean, no question about that. Diversity is a good thing. On the other hand, I don't know what this relationship is that Michelle Malkin is talking about with the imam of Boston Mosque.
All right, Quelly in Scotlandville. You're first up for Roy Fletcher. Good morning, Quelly.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
Fine. Good morning.
Hey, I have two questions for you as far as the Jubal administration is concerned. Here recently, we've been having some increased debate over the voucher program that the governor supported and initiated here in Louisiana. My question to you is, Mr. Fletcher, do you think that it's fair for the governor, his program, to cherry-pick the best students from our public school system, put them in private and parochial schools, and then turn around and blame the teachers for having to educate, let's say for the sake of argument, the worst students, the students that are incorrigible, the students that have difficulties learning? Do you think it's fair to cherry-pick, take credit for the success of these students that go to private schools, and then lambaste the teachers, and then hold them accountable with teacher certifications and teacher accountability laws in a situation where they're almost going to fail every time?
Well, I mean, whether I think it's fair or don't think it's fair, that's the way it is. Now, I think that what I would feel more comfortable talking about is what the politics of the situation is. I just finished a statewide poll and for somebody else, and the voucher system in this state is quite popular. And interestingly enough, it is popular with those people that you would that seem to be represented by, but and particularly African Americans. Very, very popular program with African Americans. And I think that's interesting. The question of teacher testing and that high stakes testing and that sort of stuff is very popular with people. And I think that Jindal, in that regard, the governor's been able to weave a good web there. The problem is, is that the Supreme Court has found the financing of the voucher system unconstitutional because it took money out of the MFP.
And the governor now has to find $41 million
yes.
to fund it.
And I got to say, there's a lot of people out there that wants him to find that money to fund it.
How about a cigarette tax? Now that you've given up smoking, you're probably all for that, Roy Fletcher.
Oh, I don't want them smokers to have to pay taxes now. I think they pay it enough already. No, I did give up smoking. I'm very proud of that. I'm on my about fifth, sixth month now.
Well, very good. Congratulations.
I'm very, very happy about it.
It took a while.
It did. It took me a long time in my life to quit.
Well, and you look fit at 62?
Jim, don't go there. You know, I don't mind looking fit, but let's not repeat the age here. You know.
Okay, well, speaking of birthdays, you know the state capitol will be 81 years old in 2 days.
Is that right?
And yesterday we had the famous architect who's written a book, Architecture of LSU, Michael Desmond, on the show. He'll be at Barnes & Noble tonight, City Place, 5 to 7 p.m., by the way, with his book, Architecture of LSU. We were talking about Leon Weiss. He was the architect for the state capitol, not related to Carl Austin Weiss,
right.
who killed Huey Long a few years after the Capitol opened.
Right.
We were talking about Leon Weiss, and I said I thought he went to jail, and sure enough, Weiss was indicted in 1939 during the Louisiana hayride scandals for having yes. used the U.S. mail to defraud in regard to an unspecified building contract for Louisiana Tech. Weiss's trial was marked by guilt by association tactics by the U.S. attorney and by anti-Semitism. He was convicted in 1940 and imprisoned. So the man who drew up plans, made it happen for the state capitol, went to jail.
It's not unusual.
You know, that reminds me of the story when Edwin Edwards was acquitted in New Orleans in 1986 in his second trial. He found out that the jury leaving the hotel had cleaned out the hotel room, you know, taking some things that probably were not theirs. And Edwards had the classic line, "Well, that's a jury of my peers." HB in Denham Springs. Good morning, HB. You're on the air with Roy Fletcher.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Fletcher, it seems to be a major difference in the bean counters between the legislative auditor and Mr. Kennedy against the administration on how much money we have coming in, how much money is going out that we can really count on. And also the numerous tax credits that the paper reported that is costing us more than the credits is generating in the economy.
Right.
Your opinion, please, sir.
I got a problem with just my predilection. I just got a problem with a lot of these tax exemptions. I don't know which ones are right, which ones are wrong. But I think they ought to be applied to a cost benefit analysis and see where we come out on these tax exemptions. On the other hand, the exemptions are not in the Louisiana tax code, for better word. They're not in the law because they don't have a constituency. They're there in the law because there's a clear constituency for them. And when you start to fool with them, the constituency comes running out and beats people half to death. So, I mean, I gave you my answer, just my personal opinion, but what I know about that, I have no idea. I mean, you know, but there is a big difference between the bean counters.
U.S. Senator David Vitter is calling for a full audit of the Internal Revenue Service after it has been revealed that applications for tax-exempt status by conservative groups have been specifically targeted for added scrutiny. David Vitter on the right track?
Probably. I do think, though, that I think we need to take a deep breath here and remember something. There's a ton of really good public servants in the IRS. They are, and they are non-political, et cetera. Now, what's happened here, I don't know, and no one else does either, except we do know this. The IRS apologized and admitted that they did this. And there is a long history now, 3 years, we know of the IRS denying that this happened, a leadership in the IRS, and information going to the top of the IRS that it was happening. We talk about it when we come back from the break.
You heard that music.
Oh, I hear the music.
Yeah, and we'll talk about U.S. Senator David Vitter leading the charge, too. Is he the right man to take aim at the Internal Revenue Service. 297-5633 is your number. Back after this timeout. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. You may reach us at engstershow@wrkf.org. Political consultant Roy Fletcher, who's one of those rare animals who has Democrats and Republicans in his stable. Because the state has veered so rightward, though, I would imagine most of your clients now are Republicans.
Most of the
candidates and most of the clients are Republicans.
Yes, most of the candidates are Republicans.
Okay. Well, one man you did not handle was David Vitter. You handled the campaign against him by Chet Traylor a few years ago.
I've handled several campaigns against David.
And Vitter doesn't like you, does he?
I expect not.
Okay. So you're a man who has Republican clients and maybe conservative leanings. You probably agree with the senator on many things, but is he the guy you want out there pushing for this IRS?
Charlie Bustani is the guy. Charles Bustani.
He's doing it too, but from the U.S. Senate standpoint.
I mean, you know, I don't think he's the. You know, it seems to me that there's so many controversies going on right now that somebody's got to do it, and he. But I think that there's probably other people out there that could do it. For the party as well. I do think this, though, that one thing about this is that clearly the IRS said they did this yesterday, 2 days ago, whenever it was. Yesterday, the president said, if they did this, what was the president talking about? Somebody has to make a decision of whether a 501c3 is a political thing or not. That's the tax exemption. The IRS has to make that decision. Now, if they were targeting to make that decision, that's one thing. That's bad. But if they were just trying to make a decision and there's progressive groups in this report that comes out tomorrow, that's another thing.
Okay. But Senator Vitter escaped charges.
I do think, let me say this, it's a smart thing for him to get out there on the front of, though.
But there are going to be people pointing at him saying, look.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but he's got to live with that the rest of his life. So, I mean, you know, he's just got to keep going. You keep chopping cotton and keep going.
Charles on North Foster. Good morning, Charles. You're on the air with Roy Fletcher.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Roy. Two quick questions on Mr. Fletcher. Politically, why were private students given a pass on the LEAP exam and the graduate exit exam politically? And the second question is, why did the governor choose Sharon Weston and Regina Barrow, both Democrats, to close Earl K. Long Hospital here?
All right. I don't have a clue. I mean, I don't have a clue. I mean, I just can't tell you. I don't keep up with that much, and I can't offer an opinion on that. I can just tell you that most of the people in this state, everything I want private school kids and public school kids to have to take that LEAP test. I do know that for a fact.
Yeah, well, it would seem what's fair for one is fair
yeah,
for the other.
Yeah, I mean, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, as we mm-hmm. used to say in the country.
All right. 297-5633. Sarah on I-10 asks about Grover Norquist, saying should the governor denounce Mr. Norquist?
Denounce him?
Denounce him.
Oh, I don't think she should denounce. I mean, what? Why would you denounce him? I mean, but... But, I mean, I don't know that Grover Norquist has anything to do with the governor.
Well, the governor is not going to go for any new taxes.
Well, that doesn't mean – I mean, it's a conservative and illogical position, not a Grover – but I'm kowtowing to Grover Norquist. I mean, that's not – I mean, you know, I mean, then you could say that anybody in the – well, Karl Marx is for taxes, so you obviously call a Marxian. No, I'm Marxist. No, I don't think that's fair.
There have been Republicans in the past who embraced taxes, though. Ronald Reagan, Mike Foster.
Mike Foster.
Buddy Romer.
I mean, let me just be very clear about it. Yeah, Ronald Reagan, 26 times or something. Yeah.
Okay, let's hear another Republican, Alan Simpson, the former senator from Wyoming. Here's what he has to say about Grover Glenn Norquist. Kevin, do we have it? Okay. Kevin says, give it a minute and we'll have.
The other thing that's clear is that a country cannot maintain it.
All right, we'll try.
Yeah,
that sounded a lot like Charlie Rose.
Yes, it does. No.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Good morning,
Phil. Good morning,
Phil. You're on the air.
Hadn't seen you in a while, bro.
Well, you know how, and you're probably the luckier for that.
Yeah,
my question to you, sir, is I guess a couple. If it's unconstitutional for the MFP to fund the vouchers, does that apply to the TOPS program? I mean, is that like a carryover? Does that make that?
No, the TOPS program is, as I appreciate it, is a separate appropriation. It's for higher ed, and so no, I mean that's not a problem. The problem with the MFP is supposed to be for public schools. It's not for public school kids. I mean, that's sort of one of the things. The argument has been follow the money and all that. But in this case, the Constitution is very clear about the MFP being for public schools.
Veronica at LSU. Hi, Veronica. You're on the air.
Hi. First of all, I'll give a disclaimer. I am a flaming liberal. But with that being said, my
that's not a problem. I'm a flaming liberal too on one issue.
with that being said, I was wondering if you think liberals and progressives are giving President Obama a pass on his foreign policy.
Yeah, I do. And you know, let me say this. I think that what's happening with what we have going on with these three controversies right now is that that's getting to be less so. I think that what you're getting ready to see. Remember, Nixon was impeached by the Republicans, not by the Democrat. You're getting ready to see some serious blowback on the president, particularly with the FBI and the AP thing. And I think that I remember, Jim, when I started my radio program right here in this room, September the 12th, 2012, guess what? I said Benghazi was a disaster. It's turning out that way.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not. It didn't beat. You said it also would beat Barack Obama, and it did not. Yeah. You predicted Romney would win.
Well, I did. I said that. I clearly said that. And at the end,
Because of Benghazi.
I said it was a close race.
Okay. Federal investigators secretly seized 2 months of phone records for reporters and editors of the Associated Press in what the news organization says is a serious interference with AP's constitutional rights to gather and report the news. This is something that I think you're right. Liberals, conservatives, no matter what your political ideology, we as a country should be up in arms about this.
Well, I mean, again, I want to take a deep breath. Remember that what we're investigating, apparently there's a federal grand jury, major federal investigation about leaks with respect to the Yemeni leaking of the story that that some terrorist was coming over here to blow up an airliner. The fact is, though, is that the subpoena was brought that allowed this, and you know, I find it interesting that when news people get when the news business gets treated this way, everybody goes up in arms. But when an individual citizen gets treated this way, nobody goes up in arms. The Fourth Amendment's for everybody. That a warrant ought to have particularity. It ought to be in a certain time frame, et cetera, et cetera. And that's what is to me is at issue here. And it infuriates me that it would not be handled that way.
Okay.
One thing else about that.
Yes.
Remember when that story was leaked? The conservatives argued that was a leak from the White House to demonstrate that Obama was tough on terrorism. Now, all of a sudden, hey, what do we got here? This is a whole different deal now.
877-217-5757, wherever you may be. That's the number that Sam in Monroe dialed. Hi, Sam. You're on the air with Roy
Fletcher. In Monroe. Hey.
I have a question for both of you. Is the media so far in the tank, or is it just me? I'm talking about on both sides of the fence. You have you would see as the left-leaning media that's not asking the president any tough questions or giving him a pass. And at the same time, on the other side of the fence, it seems that Fox News seems hell-bent on just tearing apart anything that anyone does that whose views might differ from their own. is what's happened to the objective media. And you guys are a couple of experts on this. And
Sam, you know that there's no such thing as an objective media. There never has been. There's always been. There was the big three, and they were moderate to liberal, and 85% of the reporters in this country, by their own admission and polling data, are liberals. There is not objective media. I mean, that's just the bottom line. What we have to do is we have to take and filter what each one of them is telling us and to garner the facts that we can garner and then start to make up our own mind, and we will.
By the way, the gentleman, if he's still with us, are you there, Sam?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I think I recognize the voice of Sam Hanna, who also is a member.
Well, I am,
of the media.
And I'm asking. I mean, I don't think it's a fair shake being played out here on each side. I think they're doing the public a disservice.
I concur with you, but it's turned into a partisan thing, and we don't have the big three anymore to referee the whole deal: the ABC, CBS, NBC, and now it's interesting. But on the other hand, if you did not have somebody like the Fox News whacking away on this Benghazi thing, we wouldn't have gotten as far as we've gotten with this thing.
Well, I think there are places where you find very good news coverage.
I do think
including National Public Radio, including the New York Times.
I don't know about that, but I think NPR is not bad. I think Fox is not bad.
Fox.
Absolutely. I think CNN.
Fox, and I think that's what Sam's talking about. Fox and MSNBC, you know, pick your poison. One's biased for the left and the other's biased to the right.
MSNBC is a PR firm. Fox News has done a heck of a job on this Benghazi thing and on other stories. I forgot what the story a few weeks ago. I noticed Fox News broke it first. They were right there. When they were catching those fellows up in Boston. I mean, they do a good job of reporting. They got good reporters.
They also reported wrongly the Supreme Court decision saying Obamacare had been struck down.
Yes, they did.
They got that wrong. They reported
well, we don't want to talk about what CNN got wrong either. So
CNN's made mistakes too.
Yep, they all make mistakes. I don't have a problem with reporters making mistakes. What I have a problem with, and I think what Sam has a problem with, and I concur, is that we do get a lot of proselytizing. And Fox is at fault at that, and so is CNN. Mm-hmm. But MSNBC is not even close. Okay. I mean, it's just not even close.
Well, most of the reporters at the national level are highly paid. Most of them are white. Most of them are male. And you give me that demographic, Roy Fletcher, that's not a liberal demographic.
Well, but we know for a fact.
No, we don't know.
Research with reporters have shown.
Can you name me one study that says that 85%?
Go to Pew.
I don't think that's 85% are liberal.
Absolutely. The last I read, that was 2 years ago, it was 85% in the national media. Yeah.
Okay. 297-5633. Would you share that?
Yes,
that point of view as far as local.
No. Not at all. Not at all. And I don't share that view at all with respect to local. I think that there's conservatives and liberals and moderates and people that just want to get the news right.
How about the Baton Rouge Advocate hiring James Gill?
I love it. I love James Gill, the meanest dude in the state of Louisiana with the meanest pen I've ever
seen. Now, I would consider him
seen.
Slightly left of center.
I agree. And you know what? I love reading him. I love reading James.
He's the best writer in the state.
In my opinion, James Gill is one of the best writers in America. And I mean, I don't mean that to feather his nest or polish his apple. Mm-hmm. He could care less about a scumbag like me. But the fact is, James Gill's fabulous.
You know, another good writer from the right is Ralph McAllister, the publisher of the Business Report. And
I think Sam Hanna's a pretty good writer from the right.
Aaron asks about Ralph's intention to shut down City Park. Is that a good thing?
No.
The golf course?
No, absolutely not. I'm just absolutely opposed to that. I do think that that they need to make City Park, leave it like it is, really focus on getting First Tee in there and programs like that. It's a place where kids can learn a lot about character and so on and so forth, and that's what that place needs to be used for. I'm absolutely – no, I don't believe that at all. I don't know what's going on with that, but I just got a bad feeling about all that. I just get real nervous when I hear people going to do, quote, great things for me.
No, I live a block away from City Park. Ralph lives out in Woodstone.
Yes, sir.
And in
the city, you mean where that lake where it's kind of
And City Park is one of the few places in Baton Rouge on the golf course where you see whites and blacks together. Why would we want to take that away?
I don't know why we want to take
unless
it away.
We don't want that.
I don't want that. They got
what we're going to do?
We're going to put a parking lot
integration.
We're going to put a parking lot and a restaurant there. I don't know what they got going on there. Now, if they want to put a music venue there, I got news for people. You're not just going to have the Moody Blues with the symphony orchestra playing there if you got a music venue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not going to be that way.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and so I don't know. It seems to me that it serves a very – and it has – and by the way, it's on the National Register for historical. I mean, it's only one of three in the country like that.
But Rolf, in his column, called it a quote crappy golf course. You golf there, don't you?
I've played City Park. I know people that are 60 years old that learned to mm-hmm. play golf on City Park. And you know what? I think it's a pretty good little golf course for a 9-hole golf course. And it works very nicely.
Well, what I would suggest is that they reopen the swimming pool that they closed because they didn't want whites and blacks swimming together 45 years ago. And reopen it to what it was before and encourage more integration.
Well, you know, Jim, whatever. I personally think that you're right. I mean, you do see blacks and whites out there and playing golf, and that's a cool. You know, they have a bunch of land across the street.
You know, there's some golf courses in this town where blacks can't play.
Well, I don't want to mention that name. But the fact of it, you know what it is, and I know what it is, and I've talked about it before on this show. But right across the street, they tell me that there's a bunch of land owned by Breck over there, too, from the city park. I don't know I don't know the details of it, but I got to tell you something. This don't sound right to me. There's some fishy stuff here.
Why is that? Why does it not sound right to the astute lawyer and political consultant, Roy Fuller?
Well, you know, because it sounds to me like development, that somebody wants to build something to make money and destroy something that's a really nice thing. And that's just the way and I'm not against development. But I got to tell you, right there, that's a nice, nice little golf course.
You're sounding like a liberal, Roy Fletcher.
I'm sounding like a traditional conservative, a European conservative. Go read Edmund Burke. I want to conserve things.
All right. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757. Political consultant Roy Fletcher with us for a few more minutes, and we'll also hear from Fairleigh Cook Jackson of the LSU Museum of Art. Back after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKL. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Roy Fletcher, the well-known political consultant, with us for a few more minutes. And Roy Fletcher, as noted, handled campaigns for a few governors along the way and worked with some also well-known political consultants like James Carville and Gus Weil and Raymond Strother. Here's and one of the candidates that Roy worked with was one John McCain, who was at odds with President George Bush, the last President Bush. You're still bitter about that 2000 campaign, right?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, I'm not bitter. I mean, I'm over it. I mean, I forgive Karl Rove, and I mean, he's a tough competitor, and I got my brains beat out in South Carolina, and that's just the way it is.
But it was accused.
But I thought John McCain, and I think he's a good, decent man, and he's done some things that I really like, and You know, I get tired of hearing people holler rhinos and all that kind of stuff. I don't like that.
Okay. Here's a question from Yvette Marie. She says, when President Bush was in office, there were 54 diplomats killed or injured in 13 incidents, and there were no investigations or congressional hearings on the matter. If this Benghazi thing was such a big deal, why weren't the other incidents a big thing? Can Roy Fletcher answer this? Has Fox News reported any of this?
I can answer that in some ways, but I don't want to defend that. And here's why I don't want to defend it. Because when any diplomat like that gets killed, when anything transpires like that, there ought to be an understanding of what happened. There ought to be a truth. People ought to have to come to the altar of the truth, and they ought to have to explain it. And I don't care what president it is. I could care less what president it is. And I mean that. And the Benghazi thing is it's just absolute. And let's hear more importantly, what's happened is this Benghazi thing has gone on and it's beginning to unravel and it's beginning to really question the veracity of this administration. And that's what's happening. And that's why it's important. Besides the most important thing, the four Americans who got killed.
Margaret in the Garden District. Margaret, good morning. You're on with Roy Fletcher.
Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning. I know you all have changed subjects since
Don't
I
worry about
in,
it. We'll go right back to whatever you want to.
I just wanted to make a comment about the park. I know that when Rolf wrote that article, the rest of what the article said was that if the golf course was closed, then that land could be used to expand the park, and it would accommodate so many more people. I think on any given day except the weekend, there's hardly ever more than, I'd say, 15 people that play golf on that golf course. And there are so many people in our area that would benefit from an enlargement of the park. I don't know what they do to it, but I don't believe it would be anything to bring a lot of money into the government like you had mentioned before. I just wanted to make that comment.
Thank you, Margaret. I appreciate the comment. I got to tell you something. I appreciate your honesty about it, but I don't trust anybody with that land. I just do not, and I got a bad feeling about it, as Tropic Thunder in the movie, the guy said.
Well, it would be nice.
I'd like to know what's going to happen.
We got Rolf on the show, so hopefully he'll come on and talk about this. And I don't fault him for living in another part of town. That's his choice, but he's making some judgments that could affect another part of the city, and some folks might not like that.
Yeah, that's absolutely the truth.
So you live
I lived on Delgado, which is across the lakes from where you live. But, I mean, when I was a poor boy in graduate school and I was looking for, a place to play golf besides LSU, City Park was the place. And I've played it several times since then because I liked the little course. It's a good little course. It's got some good holes on it.
But I do like the idea. The first development should happen is the reopening of the swimming pool there.
Oh, that's short there?
Yeah. It was bricked up because people didn't want whites and blacks swimming together in 1970 or thereabouts, and it's time to reopen it.
I don't remember the controversy then, but I mean I know that it happened
that's
in every
what
city
happened.
In the, it happened in every city in the South. So that's absolutely the truth.
Okay. A question in our remaining moments for Roy. Marcia wanted you to comment on the travails of your fellow traveler, political consultant one, Scott Wilfong. An attorney for Scott told a judge Monday he wants to know what evidence the State Board of Ethics had when it accused him of violating campaign finance laws and his role in the circulation of an anti-Kip Holden flyer during the 2008 mayor's race. Now, Scott did not cough up the person who paid for the flyer, who later identified himself as Daryl Glasper. If you were in the same situation, would you acknowledge your client?
I don't know. I would do what my lawyer tells me to do.
You're a lawyer.
Huh?
You're a lawyer.
Yeah, but the last thing you want to be is your lawyer. You're a fool if you're your lawyer. I do what my lawyer said do, and I think that what they're asking for here is that they're basically asking for information from the ethics board. Okay, what you got? Show us what you got. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I think he has the right to see what they got.
Okay. Well, one thing you point out may be true is that lawyers tend to get in more trouble than others at times when it comes to political judgments. Nixon was forced to resign. Clinton was impeached. And now President Obama has apparently ordered, at least he has complicity in two things right now that are not so good, the AP and the IRS.
Being a lawyer don't give you any kind of a dap on being straight. I mean, you get in trouble. I mean, it's a rough business. I mean, yeah, you get in trouble. And, you know, the best way to do it is just, you know, tell the truth the best you can, keep going.
Well, let's close on a happy note here.
Let's close on a happy note.
Sheila says she remembers a show you did on here, this program, and she says it was 6 years ago. I think
that's
about right, regarding your open heart surgery.
Yes.
It's been a while.
It's been 6 years.
You've lost a lot of weight.
Been 6 years.
Given up smoking. Yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing good. My diabetes, I've got it under control naturally. My heart feels terrific, and my smoking is gone, and, you know, I just have a back problem now, and I'm going to get that repaired, and I'm going to start getting back to running. So, I mean, you know, I I'm working hard again, and that's, you know, I got through a real difficult time in my life.
Not bad for a man of 62.
The Lord's been good to me.
Okay. Well, thank you, Roy Fletcher.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And
I appreciate it,
good
Sheila.
Good luck out there. Always good to visit with
you too,
Roy Fletcher. And now we're joined by the vivacious, fairly cooked Jackson,
who is
with the LSU Museum of Art. And you've been with a few other artistic endeavors along the way and have been representing those in previous appearances on this show.
Yeah.
How long now with the museum?
It'll be a year in July.
A year in July.
Yes.
And this is one of the fine entities in our city, one that we should treasure and showcase, and that's what we're doing, and you've got a major exhibit coming.
Absolutely.
This week, we
are the only museum in Baton Rouge dedicated solely to the arts, so we're for those of you who may not know where we are not on campus. We're in the beautiful Shaw Center for the Arts down on the river. We have a 15,000-square-foot museum on the fifth floor there. And we are constantly offering the community really wonderful exhibitions. And this one is really special in a lot of ways. This is a conjunction of two exhibitions that are going to be opening at the same time. One is An Eye on Jazz, Photographs by Herman Leonard. And the other one is Edward Pramick, Seeing Music. And so many of your listeners may know Edward Pramick's name as a local LSU professor. He taught at LSU from 1964 through 2001, so a big staple in our arts community. And then Herman Leonard, obviously, is the famed photographer who captured scenes of smoky jazz clubs and documented a lot of the wonderful musical happenings in New Orleans and around the country. But this is a really neat story because the exhibitions were going to be happening separate from each other. And then this conversation between our curator, Natalie Malt, and Edward Pramick revealed that Ed had always wanted to have an exhibition with Herman Leonard. And they had actually talked about that when Herman Leonard was still living. And so the thought was, well, this is the perfect opportunity for Ed and Herman, you know, postmortem, to actually get their wish. So
yeah,
we're really excited. It opens to our members on the 16th and to the general public on the 17th, which is Thursday, and then Friday.
Friday to the general public, and how long will it be open?
It'll be open through July 14th. Another interesting thing about this exhibition is through the generosity of Chuck Schwing and Gail Oakwan, the museum has been able to purchase 4 iPads. And obviously, the possibilities of iPad usage in a museum are limitless. And this was the perfect exhibition to debut these iPads. So our educator, Lucy Perrara, has put together some really wonderful content through iBooks Author on these iPads. So our visitors and viewers will be able to come in, check out the iPads at the front desk, and walk through the exhibition and scroll through these books on the iPad and look at everything from biographies on the artist and their subjects to you know, ways of bridging jazz with modern or contemporary music with clips from Beyonce, Lenny Kravitz. So, you know, it's just going to be a really, really neat experience.
And this is a continuation of a theme. You've had several other fine exhibits over the last year in your tenure with the museum.
We definitely had. You know, when I first started, the first opening that we had was Uniquely Louisiana. And Uniquely Louisiana actually was just honored as one of the top five university museum exhibitions in the country for this past year. So hats off again to Natalie Malt, our curator, who put that together. It was a beautiful, beautiful exhibition.
And as you note, the museum is kind of a hidden jewel.
Yes.
The people probably do think, some do, who are unfamiliar, that it's on campus. But it's right in the heart of the big city now.
It is. It is. We're. It's a challenge, you know, being off of campus. But we do have, for students who may be listening, you know, there's a free bus system that runs from the museum to campus. And for those of you football fans, I have to say, as the season approaches, you can always park downtown, come visit the museum, and then catch the bus down to campus for the Tiger game. So
there you go. 297-5633 is your number. What are the hours through the week?
Actually, Monday we are closed. That's the one day that we're closed. Tuesday through Saturday from 12 to 5. We're open late on Thursday to 8. And then we have our free first Sundays. And I want to talk a little bit about that, Jim, if you don't mind, because with this exhibition, we have so many wonderful programs, and most of these are free to the public. First, we're going to have Ed Pramick on the 2nd of June come talk about his exhibition, and this is going to be a really great opportunity for families to come. It's free admission. On Saturday, June 8th, we'll have a collage workshop with local artist Holly Barker, and that also is going to be free. And then on the 13th, we are going to have Herman Jackson, who is a jazz percussionist and a student of legendary avant-garde jazz clarinist Alvin Batiste, perform in the galleries, and that's going to be free admission as well. We've also partnered with Manship. You know, one of our new endeavors is to really collaborate with the folks in the Shaw Center. You know, we've got this amazing, you know, building and all these great organizations, but everybody is kind of operating, you know, in these silos. So we're really trying to change that and make, you know, one's visit to the Shaw Center a real experience. So we've partnered with Manship, and on July 3rd, they are going to be showing Guys and Dolls, which, you know, everybody loves Guys and Dolls. And that's going to be $6. But then you can head on upstairs after that for free admission to visit with the museum educators about our exhibitions about jazz.
Rancy in Millerville. Rancy, good morning. You're on with Fairley. Hi, Rancy.
Yes, hi. I have a question about a documentary that was produced by Louisiana Public Broadcasting. I'd heard that it was going to be shown during the Herman Leonard exhibit. Do you know anything about that?
I do. I know that we are still trying to work out what day that is going to be screened and if we're going to do it in the museum or at Manship. So my best advice would be please visit our website, www.lsumoa.org, or call the museum at 389-7200. As we get closer to the opening, which I know is at the end of this week, but and we'll definitely fill you in on when that's going to happen. But our website, we should be updating that as soon as we know.
Now, as I noted, you've had several other odysseys in the artistic world over the last few years.
Yes.
You were with the Community Fund for the Arts.
Yes.
And there's a new leader there now, isn't there?
At the Arts Council.
Yeah, at the Arts Council.
Yes. I believe he begins in June.
And Derek Gordon's shoes will be big to fill.
Absolutely. I know that the search for that director was quite a difficult one. You know, and as you know, Jim, I've been involved in Art Melt for several years.
Yes.
And this is a really exciting time for Art Melt. This is the 10th year. And at the museum, we are actually going to be hosting the 10th anniversary Art Melt Invitational, which is going to open on July 12th, right before the closing of the Herman Leonard and Edward Pramick exhibition. And it's an invitational just for the past winners of Art Melt. So it's going to be really neat. And there's going to be information about the history of Art Melt, its evolution over the past 10 years, how it started as the largest juried art show in Louisiana and has just grown in numbers at its peak enticing 10,000 people to come out for it. So
it gets bigger every year, doesn't it?
It does, definitely.
So that's July the 12th.
That's July 12th. And that will be at the museum. And the actual art mill will be held at the State Museum this year. They're moving back over there, and that's Forum 35's art mill.
Okay, so you're going to have one at the museum on the 12th of July.
Yes.
And the other one will be same time?
I think I would advise people to go to the Art Melt website, which is artmelt.org.
Okay. But two dates to remember. Friday, the exhibit opens with Ed Pramick and Herman Leonard.
Well, Thursday, if you want to become a member, which there are lots of benefits
to becoming a member. Okay, well, yeah, you could become a member, and then you can get in ahead of the pack on Thursday, and Fairley's doing her job well. That's this week, and then July 12th, on the 83rd birthday of Mike Foster and the 57th birthday of Celia Ward, the 10th annual Art Melt will be featured at the LSU Museum of Art. Thank you, Fairley.
Thank you.
And we'll keep in touch. Until tomorrow, for Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.